T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jeff Luhnow is a sleazeball. Wall Street Journal posted a story on Friday by Jared Diamond showing all the reasons that Jeff Luhnow is a sleazeball. And he knew way more what was going on about the Astros cheating scandal in 2017 than he let on the day that he was fired by Houston Astros owner Jim Crane. In Jared Diamond's story, he says that all of this started back in September of 2016 when an intern in the Houston Astros organization showed general manager Jeff Luhnow a PowerPoint presentation to decode opposing catcher signs. This PowerPoint presentation was called Codebreaker. At other times in other emails, they referred to this sign stealing as the dark arts of the organization. A Wall Street Journal found somehow obtained this email that Major League Baseball Commissioner Robert Manfred sent to Jeff Luhnow in January, a few weeks before MLB came out with a report that eventually led to the firing of Astro General Manager Jeff Luhnow and Astro Manager A.J. Hinch. In this email, Robert Manfred told Jeff Luhnow that there is more than sufficient evidence to support a conclusion that you knew and overwhelming evidence that you should have known that the Astros maintained a sign-stealing program that violates Major League Baseball's rules. So Jeff Luhnow, that day whenever he got fired, he came out with the statement saying, I didn't really know much of what was going on. This was stuff that was taking place out of my control. Well, according to Jared Diamond and the email he obtained from Major League Baseball's commissioner that was sent to one Jeff Luhnow, Luhnow's lying.
So the number one WTF in this article that came out of this article is that essentially this was a front office scheme and Luhnow knew the entire time.
That's correct. Different than the Athletic story that broke this whole thing, that it was a player-driven scheme.
Wow. Again, can I go back to the original, my original problem with all of this is that when a grown man takes a press conference or interviews and looks the camera dead in the eye, I feel like he's looking me dead in the eye, and says that he did not have anything to do with this sign-stealing scandal, right? And then we fast forward, how long ago was that? A month ago?
Yeah.
I mean, God, it was 23 days before Dusty Baker was hired, so it couldn't have been more than a month ago, right? A month ago, 5 weeks ago max.
That's a good rough estimate.
I mean, Luhnow released a statement saying that he didn't know anything about this, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, now it goes from that to the fact that it was a front office scheme and there was emails exchanged between everybody that were titled Codebreaker and Dark Arts, and it was the Wall Street Journal article goes into a lot more depth than just it was called Codebreaker and Dark Arts, right? I mean, there was actual research, right? This stuff was, what am I looking for? This stuff was actually diagrammed.
Big spider web.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to think that a guy got up there and tried to convince us that he had no knowledge of it and this is the truth. Let's say this is a stretch of the truth.
Okay.
Right? It still baffles me that a guy, Jeff Luhnow, would get up there and say that he didn't know anything about it.
Yeah. Do you want to hear Luhnow what he said in his statement after he got fired?
Sure.
He said, I am not a cheater. Anybody who has worked closely with me during my 32-year career inside and outside baseball can attest to my integrity. I did not know rules were being broken. As the commissioner set out in his statement, I did not personally direct, oversee, or engage in any misconduct. The sign-stealing initiative was not planned or directed by baseball management. The trash can begging was driven and executed by players, and the video decoding of signs originated and was executed by lower-level employees working with the bench coach. I am deeply upset that I wasn't informed of any misconduct because I would have stopped it.
Now, and I don't know that last part of it was lower level employees and players. I don't know if that's not totally. Like, I don't know if that's.
I guess
false.
The execution of the sign stealing on game day
because
was that.
The way I read the Wall Street Journal article was that that lower level employee that was decoding and doing spreadsheet and all this stuff in real time,
right,
and relaying it to the players, that guy was reporting back to Jeff Luhnow.
Yeah.
That guy was emailing Jeff Luhnow, and Luno's excuse was, I didn't read those emails all the way to the bottom.
Correct.
I responded to them, but I didn't read them all the way to the bottom because of the length of them.
Correct.
And come on, man, get the hell out of here. The bad thing, everybody looks bad in this situation, and I want to sit here and go, man, the players that actually did it look worse than anybody. But I believe that Jeff Luhnow's a guy that in the end of when it's all said and done, could possibly come out of this thing looking the worst.
713-572-4610. We have a texture saying it's now pronounced Jeff Luhnow. Not Luhnow, Jeff Luhnow,
yes.
From the former Houston Astro general manager who, according to the Wall Street Journal, knew about Codebreaker, knew about the dark arts of the organization way before that anybody believed and way before the Athletic, whenever they accused the player and the manager of starting the whole deal. Wall Street Journal saying, no, it's front office executed.
You know, the second WTF right there in this article is that the article alludes to A.J. Hinch possibly not knowing about it, the scheme, this Codebreaker scheme and the dark arts scheme, the lower level employee that was working on this thing. They actually had an exchange.
Yep.
This lower level employee and Jeff Luhnow actually had an exchange of how much of this does A.J. Hinch know about it?
Yeah, Luhnow asked that to the Coke Wesser, the employee you're talking about.
See, to me, and this does not make an excuse for Hinch by any means, but that legitimizes like Hinch's culpability in this thing, right? Does that make sense?
It was almost going around A.J. Hinch.
Yeah. There's no way around the fact that A.J. Hinch is the manager and he should have put a stop to it, period. Point blank.
He said that himself.
There's no way around that. Right. He faced the music and said that himself. But when this lower-level employee and this GM are communicating and they got to communicate back and forth about how much the manager, not head coach, I'm putting 50 cents in that bucket.
I got halfway.
How
there.
Much the manager knows about this tells me that A.J. Hinch was not completely in the loop.
Right. I mean, this was
make of that what you will. All I'm saying is it wasn't like A.J. Hinch was in a conference room with Jeff Luhnow and this lower level employee and they were mapping out a game plan to get this information to the hitter in real time.
Right. Yeah. This seems like it was orchestrated from the front office. I'm sure at some point the players and maybe some of the coaches started to take part in it. And then, of course, these guys being baseball guys, I mean, you have a trash can banging right behind your back. You're going to pick up pretty quickly on what it means. I mean, Danny Farquhar, the pitcher for the White Sox, that very summer in 2017, he picked up on it as well. I mean, so these guys know what's going on when they hear it over and over again. A few of the things that came out of this that I found very interesting, the fact that it was named Codebreaker is very interesting. The fact that they referred to it as the dark arts. Coke Wesser would tell Major League Baseball in their investigations that Luhnow would giggle at the title of Codebreaker and dark arts and would appear excited about it. Coke Wesser also said that Luhnow sometimes entered the Astros video room during road games and made comments such as, you guys code breaking. You mentioned the fact that he said, how much of this stuff do you think Hinch is aware of? And then the biggest thing that came out of this, and the first time that we've seen this be in something that's been alleged with the Houston Astros since all of the sign-stealing stuff has come out, was the fact that this was something that was going on also on the road in the 2017 season.
Yeah, look, the Wall Street Journal, this article has contradicted a lot of the details that I think were first released.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've just seen the tip of the iceberg. I think A.J. Hinch comes out, the manager comes out and talks. These players are fixing to go to spring training, and they're gonna talk. At some point in time, you got to believe with all this going on that Jeff Luhnow is going to talk. And it's going to consistently uncover more and more of the iceberg as it moves on.
Meanwhile, earlier today, Mike Bolsinger, Clinton JB on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Mike Bolsinger, former Toronto Blue Jay, has filed a lawsuit today on the Houston Astros seeking $31 million. He wants this to go to, you know, youth baseball organizations to show them that you don't need to cheat in Major League Baseball. He also wants the money, if he wins, to go to support former baseball veterans as well, something that perhaps he feels like Major League Baseball is not doing a great job with it. How Mike Bolsinger really falls into the story is that Mike Bolsinger's final game that he pitched in his Major League Baseball career was August 4th, 2017 at Minute Maid Park against the Houston Astros. Bolsinger in that game lasted a third of an inning, gave up four runs, gave up a home run. He also walked three guys. I'm not sure how stealing signs helps out in the walks, although I guess you can spit on some pitches in the dirt. Anyways, Bolsinger pitched poorly, never pitched in Major League Baseball again, now is filing a civil lawsuit against the Houston Astros for $31 million. I want to point out to something else in the Wall Street Journal. In an email that was titled Road Notes from Coke Wesser, he wrote to Jeff Luhnow, "The system, our dark arts, sign-stealing department has been less productive in the second half as the league has become aware of our reputation, and now most clubs change their signs a dozen times per game," which helps the argument of how much was sign-stealing helping. He added that struggling teams like the Toronto Blue Jays and Oakland Athletics seem not to care as much about the dark arts, as the Houston Astros would call it. Toronto Blue Jays, Mike Bolsinger, August 4th. I don't think the Blue Jays were caring that much about changing up their signs. Bolsinger got lit up. He would never pitch in Major League Baseball again, and now he's suing the Astros for $31 million.
Yeah, this is not a good look right here. I mean, first of all, Bolsinger's a former Razorback.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That hurt me right there. But, you know, I think this one's got legs because it's not – you know, he's seeking unspecified damages, but they're not all for himself. You mentioned $31 million that were bonuses
that the Astros got in the playoffs.
And he wants the money to go to charities, in Los Angeles, which, by the way, they're not big fans of the Astros right now either in that area.
No,
focused on bettering kids' lives, as well as create a fund for retired baseball players who need financial assistance. So at first glance, you go, man, get the hell out of here. You're just trying to get a quick paycheck. When in reality, he doesn't want any of the money. So this thing could potentially have some legs moving forward.
I've seen also that this might be the first of many lawsuits. I've seen like FanDuel might sue Major League Baseball or the Astros and how it affected their games.
Yeah.
I saw stuff on Facebook too, like, did you go to an Astros game? Join this class action lawsuit. I'm going to have to do that just for the radio content of it. But it seems like there's going to be a lot of other lawsuits that come towards Major League Baseball and the Houston Astros with this cheating scandal as well. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, coming up next. The Rockets, they lost last night. They've lost two times since we talked to you on Friday. But are we still bought in with the small ball approach for the Houston Rockets? We discuss it next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. The Rockets have lost twice since we last talked to you Friday. Lost the second game of the back-to-back in Phoenix. They didn't have Russell Westbrook in that game. And then they lost a heartbreaker yesterday to the Utah Jazz. Bogdanovich hitting that three-pointer as the time expired. Double-teamed about 4 feet from behind the three-point line. And he sent all the fans home unhappy from the Toyota Center. But Rockets, since that trade, 1-2. Since they traded Clint Capella, they committed to 47 and 50 seconds to small ball. They went 1-2. But they had the win against the Lakers, loss against the Suns, loss against the Utah Jazz. 1-2 since then, getting rebounded every night. Are you still feeling the same way you were about buying all into the small ball approach?
I'm bought in, man. I love the change. The simple fact that there was a need, they felt there was a need for change. They got their guy in Covington in their sights, and they went and made the move. They committed. They're all in. I'm bought in. I think it's important to – they're 1-2 in the last three games, but mm-hmm. I think it's important to also mention in that game in Phoenix that Eric Gordon went out as well.
Yeah.
And Eric Gordon was not there last night versus Utah.
They're saying he's not going to come back until after the All-Star break. Now,
right,
too.
Right. Well, the point is that they're 1-2 without those guys there. Without Westbrook and Gordon in the Phoenix game, and then without Gordon last night. Nonetheless, not an excuse of why last night's game turned. But it was a hell of a basketball game. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that game, but it was a hell of a basketball game. They weathered a storm of a drought from beyond the perimeter. They weathered the storm of Gordon not being there, and they were able to give themselves a lead with 1.6 seconds left in the game, and they hit a desperation shot from damn near half court when a guy was double covered to win the game. But what I see though, JB, is the Westbrook effect is real, man.
Okay.
And the obvious meaning behind that is there's no Clint Capela in the no center. No body at all in the paint. And so you're opening up the entire offense based on the fact that Russell Westbrook gets to the rim more often and more successful than damn near anybody in this league. And so the buy-in or the thought process is to complement Russell Westbrook the absolute best that the entire Rockets organization can. First and foremost, and they're buying in on both ends of the floor relative to the energy and effort that you see. It's a total different team, man. First and foremost, right? The Westbrook effect is real.
I think, too, like, whenever the Rockets made this trade, everybody said, okay, well, now all of a sudden the interior play, like the post play, the points you're getting in the paint, the productivity you're getting in the paint is going to go way down. Now the Rockets are going to shoot seven, like LeBron said it. They went from a team that's shooting 40, 45 threes. Now they're going to shoot 60, 65, 70 threes. One thing that at least I didn't account for, and I believe a lot of people didn't account for either, was the fact that the Rockets' production of the paint has actually went up. And it's because now that lane is not clogged with Capela, with whoever's guarding Clint Capela. Yep. It's parted the Red Sea, so to speak. And now Westbrook getting to the hoop, Harden getting to the hoop more often. I'm a little surprised that the paint productivity has went up with the small ball approach.
And you know what's crazy about that is – like, I knew Harden could get to the rack, but I didn't know he was so strong getting to the rack. Because it's to the point, everybody knows Westbrook, right? Even if it's a seven-footer, if he's out of position or he's late to close the lane, Westbrook's going up and hanging in your face. I mean, it's over, yeah. Right? Harden's the same way, man. Harden goes up strong and either gets the bucket or gets to the free throw line a hell of a lot of the time. And so just – I love the effect that Westbrook has on the entire team. It's absolutely contagious on both ends of the floor. And I love the fact and commend and respect and admire James Harden tenfold more today than I did a week ago. Harden, one, he's okay with everybody going, hey, they're going to cater to Westbrook. He's cool with it.
Right.
In game, he's totally okay with going, hey, Russell, take this down the floor, or sharing the ball to the extent of where all the different guys are getting open looks and knocking down threes. I can't believe that Harden has adjusted his game the way that he's adjusted his game throughout this.
Yeah, he finished with a triple-double last night, 28 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Didn't shoot it well. 2 of 13 from behind the three-point line.
That's the storm I'm talking about they weathered.
They weathered the fact that he didn't hit those threes. I'm loving the Westbrook style, though. I think you're completely right. Like the Russell Westbrook effect is real. That's the reason that they made this trade to me more than anything else. But I also have loved to see that the way Harden has played these last three games. Like when Harden's on, he's going to get up his shots. Like that.
Yeah.
This is still Harden's team. We're not saying that. This is still James Harden's team. But the Rockets made this move in order to optimize Russell Westbrook, and they felt like James Harden was going to be okay with either system. And in a lot of ways, this also improves Harden. Like, if you get Harden when he starts knocking down his shots, I mean, he's going to have 50-point nights with this type of offense. Well, he's going to go to the rim, and he's also going to have that shot falling.
JB, when you've got the supporting cast, too, Harden doesn't have to play. One thing we talked about last year, and I didn't necessarily agree with it because I think Harden's style of play is so effortless that it's the wear and tear on his body is totally different than the wear and tear on Russell Westbrook's body.
Okay.
Right? And so I'm less inclined to buy the exhausted boy. Harden just ran out of gas in the playoffs last year. Like I ain't buying all that.
This year?
I didn't buy it last year.
You didn't think he was out of gas?
No, he went 2 for 13 last night. Was he out of gas? No, he was just off. I mean, it's like Wes, he's such a great scorer that when he comes up against a good defender or he gets cold or he doesn't put up the numbers, he got gas. No, he didn't. He shrunk in the moment or it wasn't out of gas. But nonetheless, if you are of that group that thinks that Harden ran out of gas, I think one of the things that's awesome about Harden's game is that it's so effortless that he shouldn't run out of gas. He doesn't run out of gas. It's why he's so effective in the regular season. But nonetheless, it's to me his ability to rest right now and let Westbrook run the point, and you really don't lose a whole hell of a lot because you're kicking it to Gordon, you're kicking it to PJ Tucker, you're kicking it to House, or you're kicking one of them guys. Those guys are knocking them down.
Open
man.
Looks, wide open.
Hey,
looks.
Robert Covington last night, he knocked another monster down
late
in the game. Him and PJ Tucker. I mean, these guys are clutch shooters, and it's just so. Not only are they is Harden adjusting his game, and I don't want to say taking a back seat because I agree with you. I think it's still Harden's team, but he's definitely taking a lesser of a role throughout all this, and that may prove to be a big-time positive in the playoffs if you're of the group that believes that he was running out of gas late in the season last year.
I tend to believe more of your side of it. I also don't believe it's necessarily that he was gassed in the playoffs, but the amount of minutes he had been playing in years past was absurdly high, like way too much. And I do want him to lower the workload going into this postseason. I don't think he was tired of the playoffs.
Yeah, but. No, I can see that. Look, my deal is like just the effortless style that he plays is it's hard for me to go, man, that guy is absolutely gassed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of people want to
it's almost an excuse at that point.
Well, yeah, when you talk about, man, he only got up four shots in the fourth quarter in the game five last year in the playoffs, which I don't know if those numbers are accurate, by the way. I don't even know if it's a ballpark. The point is if you come up and you go, man, Harden only got up four shots in the fourth quarter of the game last night, and then the biggest moments, man, what the hell happened? Oh, well, he was gassed. No. We're not going to go there, right? Because Harden's going to get his shots up. And so I just think that if you are of the group that believes Harden got gassed late in the season, this move to this smaller lineup could prove to be a positive for him getting rest late in the season and having more juice in the playoffs.
Now, the loss was a bad loss because Utah is the team that you're chasing for the fourth spot in the Western Conference. Rockets are now a game and a half behind Utah, and they lose the tiebreaker, so it's almost like a two-and-a-half-game lead for Utah.
It was brutal, too, because when P.J. Tucker hit the three to give him the lead, the announcer started talking about that.
Oh, really?
This is a huge game, man. This is a huge win. And, it was a dagger, man. That was a dagger, no doubt. But again, if you didn't watch the game, you just look at it and go, oh, what the hell are they doing? No, man, they look good. They played good basketball. They weathered the storm. They fought through some adversity, and they should have won that basketball game. I know there's no moral victories, and should I ain't ever done a damn thing. I get it. But when it's all said and done, if you watch that game last night, the product that the Rockets put on the floor, you can win with.
I think it's contagious too, right?
Oh,
like the small ball approach. Like you can see that on the floor.
On the defensive end of it, JB, on the defensive end of the floor, gosh dang, man, it's fun to watch. Now, did Rudy Gobert have some advantages throughout the game? Sure. Did AD have an advantage throughout the game?
Yes.
Did Ayton and a couple of them other big cats for Phoenix have an advantage? Yeah, they had some advantage. But the way that the Rockets execute the plan to offset the size difference, it's fun to watch. But it's not always successful. But it's fun to watch. You think, how in the hell are these scrappy suckers going to defend when they're catching balls, when these 7-footers are catching balls in the paint, and they find a way to get it done? It's impressive. And then they run the floor, and the big fella has to fight his tail off just to get up and down the floor.
Right.
And so we'll see. We'll see how it all works out. But the 1-2 in the last three games, that doesn't bother me at all because I've watched all of them, and it's a good brand of ball they're playing.
Yeah, I have to. And the 1-2 is misleading. They are getting out-rebounded. They got out-rebounded by 12 yesterday against Utah. But to counter that point, the Rockets only turned it over 6 times yesterday. Utah turned it over 15 times, so they were +9 in that category, and they took 9 more shots than Utah did. So that's a positive in that direction. The fact that the Rockets are only turning it over, or at least last night, only turned it over 6 times. When you have Harden, one of the worst turnover-prone players in NBA history. Same thing with Westbrook, one of the worst turnover players in NBA history. Only to turn it over 6 times, to me, is a huge positive going forward for the Houston Rockets. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham coming up next. A.J. Hinch had a one-on-one Q&A with MLB Network for the first time last Friday. What did he have to say, and what did we think about what he had to say? Next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Former Astro manager A.J. Hinch spoke for the first time publicly after being fired by the Houston Astros cheating scandal in Major League Baseball. He sat down with Tom Verducci of Major League Baseball of MLB Network. We were on the air whenever it all happened, so we were just catching a little bit of the excerpts, what we saw on Twitter. Yeah. I went back and watched the whole thing later that night. What'd you make of the interview with A.J. Hinch and Tom Verducci?
I thought he won. I thought A.J. Hinch won. I thought it was a good look in a very bad situation. The only thing that A.J. Hinch can do from here on out is take steps towards being allowed back in this league. And I don't mean allowed by just when he serves his one-year suspension, but when I say that, I mean taking steps towards earning the trust of another owner and another organization to allow you to be the manager of their franchise. And so I believe he did that. I believe he accomplished that. I believe not only did he do that, but he did it in a genuine and sincere way throughout. He never passed the buck.
He had
times and opportunities that he could have done that. He never passed the buck. I felt like he stared everything in the face and answered every single question and did a good job. He did an admirable job in a very, very tough situation of which we don't know all the – today, other details coming out. We don't know all the details. We don't know to what degree A.J. Hinch was aware of things, at what point he was aware – he was made aware of things. You know, that's all gray area. But nonetheless, I think the former manager of the Houston Astros, A.J. Hinch, won this interview. He won according to what's ahead of him to get back in this league. And I thought he did a good job. I think as a man, I respect and admire the genuine, sincere manner at which he went about addressing these issues. I've always been an A.J. Hinch fan, and a lot of that has been based off of the way I feel when he talks. I feel like he is a solid dude. I feel like his heart, his mind is always in a good place. He made a mistake, and he's answering to it right now.
Honorable, admirable, to me was very sincere from start to finish.
No
As you
question.
Said, he had multiple times where he could have pinned the blame somewhere. Like, look at Jeff Luno's statement the day he got fired. Like, he pinned the blame on bench managers or bench coaches and players, whereas A.J. Hinch has accepted responsibility the whole way, even whenever he might not be, you know, the main responsibility of why this all happened. But he talked about, you know, the situation. He said to him, good leadership is not only how he leads and what he does, but what he tolerates. And he said he was sorry for not, you know, for tolerating too much.
Yeah, beside being just genuine and sincere in everything that he said, whether you agree with it or it's right or wrong, the genuine, sincere manner in which he did it was phenomenal. But what you just said, JB, the leadership aspect of this thing, the way he addressed the lack of leadership in 2017 and the fact that he is much more mature as a leader in 2019 than he was in 2017. To be able to say that, right, and then immediately say, but it happened on my watch and I'm responsible for it. And he made sure that he backed every little bit of the interview that could have been taken and misconstrued by the media as an excuse. He immediately backed it up with, it was on my watch, it's my responsibility. And I know there's a lot of people out there that may be mad at A.J. Hinch, and I totally understand that. My father is one of them, right? I mean, he's one of them. That he's mad at Luno and the Astros and A.J. Hinch and the play. He's mad. But when it's all said and done, if you don't respect the way that A.J. Hinch addressed things from a leader of men standpoint, then I don't know what to tell you. I thought he did a hell of a job from that standpoint.
And, of course, Sports Radio 610 will be out in Florida, out in the Sunshine State for spring training. Pitchers and catchers report on Thursday, and we have Texas Bay Credit Union to thank for that. Let's listen to some of A.J. Hinch. He was discussing taking the blame throughout.
You know, it happened on my watch, and I'm not proud of that. I'll never be proud of it. I didn't like it, but I have to own it because in a leadership position – I mean, the commissioner's office made it very, very clear the GM and the manager were in position to make sure that nothing like this happened, and we fell short.
A.J. Hinch saying that they fell short as an organization, part of him taking some of the responsibility.
You know, I think that was the clearest point that was made by the commissioner of Major League Baseball initially, was that the GM and the manager were told beforehand that if it continues, that it was going to fall squarely on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. And that's been mentioned multiple times throughout by several different parties. And to me, that's where A.J. Hinch has a clear understanding that he should have done better. I think there's a lot of gray area around this topic. Even if you're A.J. Hinch, there's a lot of gray area in how you should have handled it versus how you handled it. Should the players have taken, these are grown-ass men, should they have taken that their manager destroyed two TVs that you were using to illegally steal signs? You're a grown-ass man. Should you have taken that and said, okay, guys, this is a little bit much, let's back off? You're damn right you should have.
Yeah.
Should A.J. Hinch have done more? Sure, he should have done more. But, man, he just did a hell of a job of addressing it in a manner of, I'm much more mature now than I was then, and I wish I would have handled it differently.
There was one part during the interview where they showed A.J. Hinch addressing some of the cheating allegations in 2019 when the Astros were in the playoffs against the Yankees, and you know there were some allegations that the Astros were NASA. Yep. There was some whistling going on, and the Astros were getting signs that way. Well, A.J. Hinch, whenever he said that in 2019, he said, you know, I wish people would put their name on what they're saying. And it was very bold, was borderline arrogant whenever he had to say that stuff. And then they showed this to A.J. Hinch during the MLB Network Q&A that Tom Verducci had with the former Astros manager. And A.J. Hinch defended that decision a little bit.
We had played a couple games against the Yankees. And the issue in question was dating back to like game one. And so I knew a little bit about it going in, and it wasn't until we got to New York when I was getting asked the question.
The accusation was that you were getting signs and relaying by whistling to them.
And we weren't. When I sat at that podium, I'm going to defend this group of players. And that's my job. And that's how I felt. And I didn't like the line of questioning. It was uncomfortable. I came out firm. It was talking about 2019. And then when the investigation started, and we started getting investigated about 2017, I know it looks bad because it kind of gets blurry in the entire organization over the course of a few years. But I believed in what we were doing in 2019.
So Hinch understands that the optics didn't look good, but he wanted to defend his guys, the 2019 roster.
Yeah, and I thought it was a tad bit BS that he was put in a position to need to justify defending his roster in 2019. I mean, look, I understand. We had a caller earlier. I totally understand the thought process of he should have to answer any question that a reporter throws at him, and that's that reporter's job. And look, I totally get that. But I felt like it was a little bit misleading to me as a viewer to, I'm tuning in to something about a manager getting fired because they stole signs in 2017 and 2018, and it includes a press conference of the playoffs in 2019.
Right.
Right? I mean, to me, I tuned in, other than the fact it was the Astros and A.J. Hinch, I tuned in to try to put pieces together from the horse's mouth, so to speak, about what went down in 2017 and what did the manager know and what does the manager have to say about it, to pigeonhole him into defending himself about something that was said in 2019, I felt was uncalled for. Could you make a reason for including that? Sure, I guess. But I just thought, like, what did that have to do with 2017 and the investigation, I guess, is where I'm going with
that. Yeah, I see your point on it. I understand why Verducci brought it up too, because it is something that people have talked about. Yeah. So if people are talking about it, you probably should ask, was it, you know, taken out of context a little bit? Yeah, probably. I mean, he was talking about the 2019 team. The cheating scandal is something that Major League Baseball has told us happened in 2017 and for parts of 2018. Here's another one from A.J. Hinch. To me, this was one of the more powerful ones, because this is the one whenever he was asked about the players and the players, what they would have done if A.J. Hinch had told him to stop.
That the players stated that if manager A.J. Hinch told them to stop engaging in the conduct, they would have immediately stopped. Do you believe that to be true?
That's hard to hear. I hope so. You know, I hope that as in a manager position,
hitting the monitor with a bat wasn't enough.
Clearly, it wasn't. And I think that's what I look back at as something I could have done better. I think as you grow in confidence, right, as you grow as a manager, if you look at my career, I'm much more confident today than I was in 2017. Where I fell short is I didn't believe that at the time. Otherwise, I probably would have handled it differently, and I should have.
That's powerful, man.
Yep.
When the reporter there gave him the out when he said, as if hitting the monitors, destroying the monitors wasn't enough, he said, clearly it wasn't, and I should have done more. He like right there, a lesser man would have said, yeah, no joke, yeah, right? You'd think they'd have got the damn message, right?
He could have turned it right there.
Yeah, he could have turned, but he didn't. He stayed steadfast to his plan and his approach. And again, man, you can think what you want about A.J. Hinch as far as the cat that disgraced the Astros or allowed that to happen, the scandal to happen. But time and time again, in every one of these pieces of audio, the dude steps up to the plate, man.
Yeah. But my biggest feel after watching the whole thing was I wish he would have stopped it. I wish he would have done what he could have now. Yeah, just because, you know, it would have ended the whole thing. I believe he would have stopped it in 2017, that this scandal probably never happens. I'm not necessarily assigning the blame on him, but I wish you'd have done it. This whole thing would have never been talked about. It would have been really the best outcome if he, you know, just put an end to it instead of smashing the TVs, maybe bringing the players together. And at least at that point, he's saving his own butt, right?
Yeah, JB, this is one of those where, like, I understand why players didn't get disciplined. I get it. I mean, and it's no point in us coming in here and going, well, damn it, how come the players ain't getting done? Well, because they got immunity, to be honest, so that they could solve this problem and get to the bottom of it sooner rather than later. So discipline the players is not an option. And I totally understand that. But I would expect, I'm trying to think back, like when I was playing ball, like if I knew something was going wrong on the teams where I was a leader, I just don't know that I would sit back and let it happen. Like, I understand A.J. Hinch should have done something. But in that same breath, you know what? Alex Bregman's ass should have done something. Verlander should have done something.
Yeah.
Cole should have done something. Dudes that got enough.
Do you think that they didn't, though? Like, that's the part where I have trouble saying, yeah, they should have done it. They should have done it. They shouldn't done it. Like, if I'm pushing back on that, like, why didn't they? And the question that I would have to the why didn't they is because they felt like the other dugout was doing it too.
Yeah, look, you start talking about other dugouts doing it. I understand that. I just, if I'm Verlander or a pitcher for the Astros and I'm in that dugout and I know that they're stealing signs and knocking guys off the mound because they're stealing signs illegally,
yeah,
I would have a very hard time not going. Now, I may not scream, but I would go, hey, guys, man, we sure we ought to be doing this?
Right.
Like, I would hurt. If that were me, like, if I was the pitcher, I would hurtle into somebody's dugout and find whoever's beating on the trash can.
Yeah.
If it were me, and they hit one deep off the into the train off the tracks up top, I would be in the dugout mad. That's how mad it would make me. So I just like if you're mad at A.J. Hinch for not saying something, which we all should be, he should have done a better job. In that same breath, you got to be mad at the leaders for not stepping up and dealing with it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. Clinton JB on Houston Sports Leaders, Sports Radio 610, 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Meanwhile, the XFL was kicking off at beautiful University of Houston campus this past weekend.
There you go.
There's some rules in this league that I'm a big fan of, and I know that you are too.
Yeah, JB, the kickoff, I'll start with the kickoff. I think the kickoff is the most likely rule in the XFL game to get transitioned into the NFL. Right, it's an alternative to taking the kickoff out of the game. And the more you look at the way that the NFL has tried to combat the run and start 20, 30, 40-yard collisions in this game, you can understand why they are trying to are considering eliminating that from the game.
Sure.
But the way that the XFL adjusted the kickoff was absolutely phenomenal. The kicker's way back by himself, right?
The loneliest place in the world.
The returner's back in his end zone, and the actual return team, and the blockers, so to speak, the other 10 guys for the return team are, I don't know if they were on the 30. I think they were on the 30. And the kickoff team was, say, on the 35, and it may be 35 or 40.
Five-yard cushion, whatever.
Right, they're 5 yards apart. And they can't move until the return guy catches the ball. And so it becomes more of a 10-man shadow and pick up the guy you're responsible for instead of 30 yards, turn around and collide with just crazy
human
force.
Car wrecks.
Yeah. And it's just, not only was it like, okay, I can see it's safe, it's safer, but it made for better returns. Like it didn't. It seems to me like everything the NFL does takes some of the electricity out of the game, right?
Uh-huh.
You move the kickoff up so there's more touchbacks, and then when they do return it, they're gonna get stopped and tackled inside the 20, and so it's one of those like, well, what the hell, right? Well, the way that they're doing it is there's a pretty dang good chance that returner is going to get a damn good return out of the deal. And so it's encouraging the return, which keeps the excitement in the game, and it's discouraging the human bodies crashing together the way that the NFL is so worried about head injuries in the game. I think it's a no-brainer that the NFL, that's one that the NFL definitely adopts.
I love the fact that you can score more than 1 point on the point after attempt. I love the 1-2-3. And you know why? It's because that's going to lead to closer games. Do you know why? Because now a one-possession game is a 9-point game.
Yeah.
In the NFL, an 8-point game is one possession. Now a 9-point game is one possession. I think that rule by default is going to keep games closer, making it more entertaining at the end.
I tell you what's frustrating about that.
What's that?
Is the team went for two instead of three and threw a fade.
That's just bad coaching, though. That's great. That's great from us, right?
Yeah.
Like, we can criticize that. We can be critical of the decision. Like, why are you doing that instead of going for three?
Yeah, if you're
going
to throw a fade, you might as well go for three at that point in time. Yeah, so, no, I love those. I love the fact that you can watch this game. You get the insight that you get. The TV crews were awesome.
Sports Radio.
You're listening to Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio.
That's right. Getting into the helmet with the coaches, the quarterbacks, and the officials, that's awesome.
I like the transparency, too, in the review booth.
Yeah.
I like the fact that we get to watch that, the fact that they show that.
Yeah.
To me, that makes for better entertainment. Like, the production value, if I'm watching as a fan, like, I want to see that. What do I want to see whenever I'm watching a game? Like, if you're showing me that to me is entertaining. Now I get to see a little peek behind the curtain.
I tell you, JB, what's crazy, too, is you can watch, like, watching the Houston game last night, you can tell that P.J. Walker, he got it together, son. He's a Sunday guy. He's an NFL guy. I can't even remember my man, the kid for L.A. I can't even remember his name. I think he was an Ivy League kid.
Yeah, he's from Princeton.
But he's pointing fingers. He's yelling he's having not heated because he wasn't mad, but it was like confused communication with the coaching staff and then with his receivers. And you look at it and you go, damn. That old boy right there, he's having a hard time handling the situation. And you look over at P.J. Walker, and he's just doing his thing. Nice, cool, calm, and collected. I loved it, man. I love the insight into being able to hear the quarterbacks do their thing.
All right, that sounds good. You know who's joining us for the 5 o'clock fire?
Who?
Your guy, P.J. Walker.
5 o'clock?
5 o'clock, P.J.
Okay.
Walker, your guy. We're going to talk to him next. It's Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.